It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a disease is threatening to wipe out the world's most popular banana. Coming up, we'll look at efforts to genetically modify the Cavendish banana. That's the one you see at the grocery store before it's too late. First, it's time for a weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. Tensions between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia continue to grow over the now-confirmed death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi and the shifting story of what happened. Meanwhile, record amounts of money are being poured into congressional races around the country, and thousands of asylum-seeking migrants from Central America are making their way on the 1,000-mile trek toward the U.S. border, setting off another political firestorm over immigration. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is immigration a big issue for you this election season? Has what people are calling a caravan of migrants from Central America heading toward the U.S. affected the way you think about the country's immigration policy? Is this an important issue in national elections, in state elections here in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back again.
Now, I want to start with a story that we hadn't planned on talking about, but we have now multiple pipe bombs targeting Hillary Clinton, former President Barack Obama, the news network CNN, billionaire George Soros. These have all been intercepted, none detonated. Developing story, a lot of information out there. Ginger, what can you tell us about this that we know for sure so far?
For sure, we have to start with the fact that no one has, at this point, been injured by one of these devices. We understand that they were live devices. They were not decoys or suspicious packages made to look like bombs. They were, in fact, bombs that were mailed to former President Barack Obama, former President Bill Clinton and his wife Hillary Clinton, to George Soros, a big Democratic fundraiser, gives a lot of money to the party. We also understand one was mailed to Congresswoman Maxine Waters, to her congressional office in Washington. And there was a package that seems to have been mailed to Eric Holder, the former attorney general in Washington, D.C., that was given the wrong address. And so it was sent back, return to sender. And the return to sender was Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz in Florida. That was where the package was found today. So a number of these packages ending up in a number of places.
And what's been some of the reaction in the political world so far, Ginger?
There has been a quick political response. We've seen a number of Democrats calling on Republicans to condemn the violence or the attempted violence, and arguing that it's President Donald Trump's violent and extreme rhetoric that is prompting some of this action. We know that in any time that there is political violence, we're going to hear political rhetoric around it, and that's a little bit of what we seem to be hearing now. And as well as that, anyone who might be so deranged as to send bombs to former or current elected officials, probably not operating with the clear political understanding that you are and I might, but we are hearing a call for the rhetoric and the temperature to get turned down.
Now, President Trump scheduled to speak today in Mosinee at a campaign style rally here. Are people going to be watching this closely to see if he tones down some of his rhetoric, especially targeting the press as he's done in recent rallies?
There will be a lot of eyes to see how he handles the rhetoric. We did hear him say already in Washington that the country needs to unify, so it was a clear, strong, and unmistakable message that acts of threats of political violence of any kind have no place in the United States. But we do know when he gets off script, when he gets up on the podium and starts talking without the benefit of a teleprompter or aides encouraging him to say something, there is going to be questions about whether or not he turns down some of that violent rhetoric. It was only a week or so ago that he was praising the attack of a journalist in Montana that drew a good deal of scrutiny.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the week's top political news stories. We'll keep following developments in that string of pipe bombs being delivered or sent in the mail to political figures. I want to turn now to a foreign policy issue that's been a big story for the Trump administration. Continued political fallout over the now confirmed death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Here's President Trump addressing reporters this week about Saudi Arabia.
They had a very bad original concept. It was carried out poorly, and the cover-up was one of the worst in the history of cover-ups. It's very simple.
We've seen a lot of changing stories from Saudi Arabia in what now appears to be a murder of this journalist, Jamal Khashoggi, and changing reactions from President Trump and his administration. What kind of steps are we seeing from the White House and Congress so far, Ginger?
We are seeing a little bit more of the president being critical of Saudi Arabia. It's taken him a little while to get to that position. He sort of began by saying that it could have been done by anyone, that it could have been any attacker or rogue killers. He then now has called it the worst cover-up, suggesting that he is in fact agreeing with what Turkey has said, and that it was the Saudis. We saw today the Saudi crown prince making his first remarks on the subject, vowing to bring to justice the killers, even as he continues to be accused of having been aware or even having helped orchestrate this attack. We see a little bit more aggression from the U.S. government. However, we also see the president saying he's going to wait and let Congress handle this. And that's a real sort of pushing off of making any sort of further decisions or imposing any sanctions. Congress has gone home until at least after next month's midterm elections. They will not be here to do anything. And the process of congressional action is very slow. Even if they were here, it would take them days, weeks, maybe even months to respond, given the process that they must take. So there is signs that we're not going to see any quick, decisive action.
We're talking to Reuters correspondent Ginger Gibson about the top national political news stories of the week. You can join in at 800-642-1234 on our question of the week for you. Will the issue of immigration factor into your vote in just under 2 weeks? Has this large group of migrants heading to the U.S. From Central America, it's getting a lot of media attention from the president. Does it affect the way you think about the country's immigration policy? What do you want to see from the U.S. government in response? Is this a big issue for you, or is it lower down your list? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Reuters correspondent Ginger Gibson, looking at some of the top political news in the nation this week. Ginger, a lot of attention in the media and from the president to this large group, thousands of asylum-seeking migrants from Central America. People are calling it a caravan, still about 1,000 miles from the U.S. border. What has been some of the political reaction to this so far, Ginger?
The president has long held the position that he would like to make the midterm elections about immigration. He thinks that talking about immigrants and stopping them from entering the country largely helped catapult him into the White House, and that he thinks Republicans benefit when the public is paying attention to the immigration issue. So the caravan gaining some attention and some headlines has become a force of which the president wants to be talking about. So we hear him on the campaign trail really sort of trying to bolster fear or concern among his electorate that this caravan is coming to America and that they're coming to do harm. That has prompted Democrats to respond, particularly to the president's tweet that hidden somewhere in this caravan were Middle Easterners. He used just a description of their race, but appearing to suggest that there were terrorists or people attempting to do harm to America sneaking in this caravan, which prompted a lot of criticism from Democrats. So we're definitely seeing this become a political issue and an issue that the candidates are talking about on the campaign trail.
In that that tweet about Middle Easterners allegedly in this group, the president was asked for evidence by reporters. Here's an exchange yesterday.
They could very well be.
But there's no proof.
There's no proof of anything. There's no proof of anything. But they could very well be.
So they could very well be Middle Easterners in that group. What do you make of how do you report on that? First of all, when the president says something with without that, he says without proof.
It is unusual that the president admits that the thing he said comes with no proof, although the press has gotten a good deal of practice reporting on things where we understand there to be no proof behind what the president said. But you're right, he has admitted that there is no proof. The president has been accused by his critics and by others of trapping in conspiracy theories, and that is what they say is happening here, that there is no reason to believe this, that one could argue could just assert there were people that are to be feared all over without proof. And I think that this is an example of him trying to really stoke some fear in the American electorate.
I want to bring on a caller now. Barbara is with us in Delafield. Barbara, hello.
Hi. I'm an immigrant. I came here at the age of 10 in 1949 from Berlin, Germany. At that point, I will have to say the Russians were after my father, okay, because he was working with the Americans. These people that are coming now, they're coming to look for safety and to give their kids a life. They're afraid their children are going to be killed or not have food. I mean, they're not coming to take anything away from Americans. I came here, we had absolutely nothing. Both my mom and my dad worked two jobs. I was the oldest, I was 10. I took care of a 7-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. I was responsible.
Barbara, I'm going to jump in. Thank you for calling and sharing your story. Ginger, Barbara, part of a very wide range of reaction, I think, across the political spectrum to images of this large group of migrants.
That's right. I've been talking to voters in some key congressional districts this past week, and I'm hearing both that sentiment that these are just people coming to find a better life, that they're going to do the kind of jobs that many Americans don't want to do, that people have trouble filling, and that they don't mean any harm economically or otherwise to Americans. But I also hear the opposite, which is that the United States ceases to be able to support more people and that there aren't enough jobs and that those Americans who don't want them to just go do them and stop complaining about not having a job. So this stokes a lot of different opinions across the political spectrum.
Barbara, thanks for the call. We'll go to Steve in Danbury now. Steve, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if hidden deep within this caravan, probably the largest we've ever seen coming north, might be some Republican Party operatives. Is it just me, or does it seem somewhat stretching the bounds of believability to think that this huge caravan is coming north now and going to arrive right around Election Day?
Steve, thanks for the call. Ginger, I've seen people say that. I've seen people from the other side say this is somehow Democratic-funded, George Soros-funded to bring his name up again. There are a lot of conspiracy theories and a lot of misleading information out there about this.
That's right. I think I saw it put best by someone on Twitter, and I could wish I could remember who to give them credit, that if these parties can't organize their own voters in Pennsylvania, what makes you think they've gone and organized voters in Honduras to travel thousands of miles in order to influence the election? It is a bit of a conspiracy theory, I think, to believe that they are being organized by political operatives on either side, although it is undoubtedly going to affect the election. There are all kinds of events in the world that affect the election. We all remember Ebola in 2014. That was not a political conspiracy to influence the outcome of the election, but it surely did influence that election at the time.
Thanks for that call. Let's move on to another election-related issue. Ginger, you recently reported that this year's congressional campaign season is on pace to break some fundraising records. What are we seeing?
We are seeing literally billions of dollars being poured into this election cycle at a rate which is going to set new records. At the end of the third quarter, so the end of the month of September, House candidates of both political parties had raised $1.2 billion, beating the record they held from 2010 at the same point in that election cycle of $1 billion. This is an unprecedented amount of money. We saw election fundraising really stabilize and be plateaued for the last 8 years, but enthusiasm on the left and a lot of candidates running, particularly in the primaries for Democratic nominations, has really infused a ton of cash into this election cycle.
Are there particular races you're looking at and seeing breathtaking amounts of money being pumped in?
One of them would be the Texas Senate race, where Beto O'Rourke, a current member of Congress, has really just raised impressive sums of money, much more than his Republican opponent, Ted Cruz. We see some House races. Amy McGrath, who's running in Kentucky as a Democrat, who raised $3.8 million in a single quarter. There are previously House races that would not have cost $1 million. So $3.8 million in a single quarter is just an earth-shattering number.
Talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters, looking at some of the top stories in national political news. Some sad news, Ginger. Former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor announced this week she's stepping away from public life. She's revealed a diagnosis of dementia. Can you remind us of the impact she had on the court and on the nation?
Sandra Day O'Connor was the first woman nominated to the Supreme Court and really sort of broke a glass ceiling that had been there for women. She's been followed by a number of other women, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and then subsequently Hagan and other women who have come onto the court, but really was sort of the first to take that role. She left the court. We know that justices are appointed for life and they can stay there until they die. She opted not to. She has played a small public role since leaving the court and has been speaking in some places, but now she will remove herself from that. And it's Sotomayor, that is the other woman that left me there for a moment.
And then, Ginger, finally, usually when we talk to you, you are in Washington, D.C. Right now, you're actually in Wisconsin, and you're in town for a town hall event focusing on trade and tariffs. What's going on?
That's right. A group that is sponsored by business will be holding a town hall in a Milwaukee suburb tomorrow. That group is called Tariffs Hurt the Heartland. They're going to be talking about how the president's tariffs, particularly on steel and aluminum and those on imported goods from China, are affecting the local economy. We're going to hear from the Restaurant Association, from retailers, from some small business owners here in the Milwaukee area, as well as Senator Johnson, who will be talking about that impact. So I have traveled to your great state. I will take all dinner recommendations from Milwaukee to my Twitter account, Ginger Gibson, and we'll be getting the opportunity to talk to folks about what they're seeing in the trade and at their prices at their local stores when they're shopping.
And you reported not too long ago that business groups aren't just talking about these tariffs. They're spending on them. There's some political advertising going on from some industry groups.
That's right. This group is putting money in addition to these events. It's not a coincidence that they're holding this event the day after President Trump is here. They're specifically targeting places that he's going. And it's not political money in that they're saying you should or shouldn't vote for any party. But they're trying to get voters to tell their elected officials that this is something that they're concerned about and that they want them to be working to get rid of these tariffs.
And we don't always see major business groups spending against Republicans in big elections. Again, this is not direct campaign spending, but it is on an issue where they are critical of the sitting Republican president.
Yes. Normally, when groups like this are engaged in activism, it's against Democratic presidents. You don't normally see multi-million-dollar campaigns targeted at Republican presidents, but this is a position that President Trump has really run cross-eyed with business groups and business organizations. And for that reason, they are taking the fight. They say that these tariffs could really impact business such that it would undo all of the economic gains that have been made in this administration. And they're concerned about the lasting impacts they could have.
And Ginger, I want to take a few moments to commiserate. You are a Houston Astros fan, yes?
I am.
And you're in Brewers country with us today, so we are in the same boat.
We're all in mourning this week. It could have been what could have been and is not. We'll have to just dream of.
Well, I guess we could have had a heated argument if things had gone differently. And just to let you know, Ginger, our producer Chris, tweeted about you wanting restaurant recommendations. That's at Central Time WPR. So hopefully we can get some good eats for you in Milwaukee. Thanks, Ginger, as always.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Always glad to join you.
Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent for Reuters. She joined us today for our weekly look at the latest news in national politics.